Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. It's Monday, the 14th of March. I guess this is the Ides of March. I never thought about that. But anyway, it's 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard, and we're going to begin our Monday, as we always do, thank goodness for that, with John Bailey. He's the White Plains Citizenet reporter, publisher, and editor. You could find him at WPCNR.com, or you could spell it out, White Plains Citizenet reporter.com. So good morning, John. How are you?
I'm good. A nice, sunny, crisp day, but better than it was. The barometer is high, and no storm clouds here anyway.
Well, thank goodness for that, because we have enough storms politically in every other which way. I don't even want to go there. It's bad enough as it is. Well, I want to talk to you about a lot of things that seem to have made an impression, and certainly I made a big impression with you. It turns out that you wrote about, you had your TV show, People to be Heard, and you interviewed Westchester County Board Chairman Ben Boykin, who represents the 5th District, and he's been... He's tried to ameliorate some issues, particularly with the Westchester Recovery Task Force. How were you impressed by that interview with him?
I was really impressed. I've interviewed him a lot over the years. You know, he is the longest serving public official in representing White Plains. This is his 30th year. Which is amazing.
Amazing.
From school board in 1992 to common council in 2000, and then he was 14 years on the council. But this is the best interview he has ever done with me, and it was really on point. He was explaining how this new task force he is heading on Westchester Economic Development and Recovery, they are going to review how the economy is going, then make some recommendations if Westchester's recovery is not going as scheduled. It's sort of an ongoing monitoring thing, which I think is smart because, covering COVID day to day, you get false impressions. However, there's no reason why you should even cover the stock market day by day, because it's just churning every day. Some days you sell a lot so you can buy back cheap, and the next days you buy a lot, so you can you make a profit. And that's what we have here, is we have a COVID exchange going on. Each day look at the numbers, and if they jog up, you get worried. If they jog down, it's over, and that it's been that way with the authorities for the last 6 months. It's amazing.
But it's very, very true. And I think until I really heard you mention it for the first time, it didn't really quite impress me as much as your expression of it. But that's a reality. It's part of the human condition. We get into these ruts somehow, and we don't even know how to climb out of it.
Yeah. However, one thing that did impress me about the end of the week numbers came out on Saturday was the fact that the New York City numbers, which had been declining to preposterously low 600 new cases a day, which is not much. It suddenly went up, and they went up to over 1,000 on a Friday, and then they increased another third in new infections on Saturday. And remember, the New York City schools completely unmasked Wednesday of last week. And then the next day, you had more tests turning positive, and then the next day, it increased by about a third. Now, as I recall, remember in December, we were getting those sort of 30% up each each day. Or
yes,
I forget it. And now I perhaps think that might be happening in the New York City schools. So we have to really watch that carefully. That's why you look at the numbers. You try and spot aberrant trends.
Well, you know, it's very interesting you bring that up here locally. But China thought that they had really wrestled everything into the ground and that they had beaten COVID. Now, all of a sudden, we find that it's grown exponentially overnight, practically. And they're worried. They're locking down a lot of cities there. With like, what they have, like 19 million people in a particular canton or whatever they call the districts. It's frightening. And we haven't gotten our numbers yet here locally. I'm really afraid, and I don't even understand why we need to take off the masks. Maybe, you know, a lot of people who don't want to wear the mask, they don't wear it anyway, or they wear it under their nose. It's of no value. But I don't know why we have to pass legislation and say, well, it's okay, the kids don't have to wear it. But the kids, whether they're infected or not, they certainly carry it, and they carry it home, and they bring it to the teachers, and the teachers bring it to the kids, and it goes on, and grandma and grandpa get hurt, and fellow kids too. And
yes,
are the kids really losing out by having to wear a mask during the day? You know,
well,
I don't know.
I think
they
adapt.
Maybe they are.
The elementary school level is where you really, the elementary schools are the where the most risk is done by the kids not wearing a mask, and because they will do whatever you tell them to do. There's a herd mentality in the elementary school that you don't get in junior high and the high school. And in the high school, this is a big problem because they socialize.
Yeah.
And, they see, and last week, you know, the school started, and I'm waiting to see what the figures per school district come out as in about a week.
Well, this is going to be really very interesting. About 2 weeks ago, there was a major demonstration in Yonkers, for example, and a lot of parents came out with their kids, and they wanted to stop having to wear the mask. And then it was almost like a precursor because it was talk that Governor Hochul was going to take the mask off. It wasn't going to be a requirement, and that's exactly what happened. And it seemed to me more of a political move than a medically prudent move. And I don't know if there's a balance between could there have been a balance between if you want to wear it, you can wear it, which I don't think was very strongly entertained. But you wouldn't be put in prison or anything by not wearing it. So I don't know why they made it seem like it's okay and safe. That's where I think it went wrong. It made it seem like it was safe to not wear a mask. And I don't know if it really is.
Absolutely. It's not safe not to wear a mask. The reason being is that you, as a person who doesn't have the disease, may have it in your nostrils or in your mouth and breathe it on somebody. You become a carrier of the virus if it gets inside your nose, but you don't get sick from it because you're vaccinated. And so therefore,
well, a lot of people lot of people have been inoculated already three times, and there's even talk about getting a fourth inoculation. So why are we getting a fourth inoculation if three evidently is not necessarily effective? So
I don't understand it either. How come suddenly three isn't enough? What are they seeing? They don't tell us what they're needed.
Well, what they are seeing is that people who've been vaccinated three times are still getting COVID. So evidently it wanes. Probably at different degrees, at different times and lengths of time with some people as opposed to others. Or maybe it's their behavior that may actually exacerbate their becoming more infected, or there are probably more people who are infected and don't even realize it.
Right, and this is a very social month, as I have said before, ad infinitum.
Absolutely.
But the reason I say it is because people need to be wary that it's not better. Look, I went around town doing some errands Friday, and the places I went to, a lot of no masking.
Uh-huh.
However, when I went into the Galleria looking for an item to pick up, I noticed that a lot of people were wearing masks. It was quite a contrast. You know, the Galleria not being as upscale as the Westchester Mall. And when I went into the Westchester Mall Friday, there were people wearing masks strolling about. And so there is more wariness than one would expect. But I feel the governor erred by saying you should take the masks off. She originally said about a week and a half ago that she was going to wait until the numbers in mid-March, but she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
She unmasked, and this is political pressure. She's taking a gamble that it's over, and she doesn't want to lose any votes in the primary coming up because she's forcing people to wear a mask. It was a political decision to make her seem like doing what the people and, of course, the politicians in both state houses up in Albany want.
Mm.
They want to be fully recovered for their elections coming up in the fall.
That's exactly right.
It's
not leadership when we kowtow to desire, to mingle and do all those things when it could conceivably be deleterious to people. But it's already been done, and this is the time of the year when everybody comes out of their winter cocoon and springtime, and love is in the air and infatuation and all kinds of things, and people want to get together. But I think that could be cut down a little bit. It's not going to be the end of the world. You can still have your personal relationships and yet still be a little bit more reluctant to not engage in better practice. So we'll very soon. I think we'll find out within 2 weeks.
Yes,
numbers are
you will.
Go through the roof.
Yes, you will, because right now we got St. Patrick's Day coming up, and then in
Absolutely.
White Plains we have a postponed parade on the 26th. That's just real social opportunities. You've got the NCAA basketball tournament kicking off this evening, and this is parties, more
yeah,
traffic
exactly.
in the bars, and this is the big danger here is socializing with people you do not know in
That's
crowded conditions.
A
Yeah, and this is why March is a dangerous month, and then we got the Easter holiday coming up, and Passover, and March and April, two tough months, and then they want to get things open for the beaches and the summer, and we're off to the races. Remember, we didn't get the third wave until after the July 4th holiday. Last year.
Exactly.
And it started,
unfortunately, it's already 15 minutes into the... Exactly, it always does. Well, we're consuming so much time, and yet there's so many other issues. I wanted to ask you about, it seems the White Plains Business Improvement District has been doing a lot of promotion in the downtown area with 25% discounts in beauty care and in health care and grooming, specialty services. How's that going for the bid?
Well,
that's very good.
I think it is very good. They wouldn't be doing it if they couldn't get participants who were successful in it last year to come back. And
that's what I thought, too.
Yes, and it really is helpful. A bid under their new leadership, Brittany Brandwine, has really come up with these promotions. She's a terrific organizer, and This is what is needed. You need people who have a promotional mindset that can convince merchants to, you know, pool together and get an attraction going. And that's what she's been able to do with fitness in February and now makeup in March. And I don't know what the April promotion is going to be, but this gets you through the winter months. And
absolutely,
it worked last year, and our economy is doing much better. But yeah, sales tax has come back, and we await those figures for February coming up this week.
Well,
so White Plains is
really
successful, and
absolutely,
we don't have that many places that have closed, and we're actually having a couple of new restaurants opening up. One was Archie's. Forget anyway, but Rory Dolan, who is the restaurateur in Yonkers, he has opened a restaurant in White Plains called Archie's Grand. Archie Grand, that's what it is. And
wow.
So that is a good sign that a successful restaurateur in Yonkers is moving into White Plains, you know, and has opened a restaurant, which is pretty popular.
Really,
so,
it is very popular in Yonkers,
yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, it's going to be really good over there, too. Wanted to ask you also about
my daughter has been
it.
There, and she likes it. Yeah,
oh, really?
Liked it, yeah.
That's great.
And, yes. Well, be that as it may, White Plains is in better shape than most other communities, and we anticipate we'll do well in the budget this year, and the school budget is not having a tax increase thanks to their planning and COVID aid, and so things are good for the White Plains citizen anyway. But,
absolutely.
You know, you've got that constant worry of this conflict and how we're managing our way through the Ukraine conflict, and you know, you have a situation over there where you don't know what Putin's going to do. And you're kind of afraid to do something because of what he will do. And this is where our problem is.
Definitely. So tell me, what's going on with the Gedney Association? What's their progress in their development plans? Have they divulged that yet, or are we still not sure? Maybe they're not sure.
Well, what they came out with was a basically a manifesto of their vision for White Plains, which consists of not as much development in the downtown, but any development would be confined to the downtown, but the outer neighborhoods would be protected and zoning preserved in the outer green neighborhoods. And this is always the way it has been in White Plains. The more wealthy sections of the city don't like development. They look at downtown development and say, oh, there's too much traffic, but they never go there anyway. You know, I mean, it's just that they want their version of the past to continue, somewhat like Texas, you know? And so what has happened now is that they have already succeeded in killing an apartment building that was going to be built on one of the commercial properties along Westchester Avenue by vocalizing their concern to the Common Council, which because it wasn't overall development enough, which was an excuse because the city created this zoning to begin with, you know, mixed-use zoning to get property owners out along Westchester Avenue, eastbound out of the city, to develop their properties to compensate for loss of tenants in the office buildings. And then last week, or was it 2 weeks ago now, New York Presbyterian Hospital announced plans to build an ancillary facility out on 1111 to 1129 Westchester Avenue, big office park, which used to be Pepsi-Cola headquarters, and that's essentially empty. And so they want to build this very large ancillary walk-in facility for people to come and see children's specialists, and just sort of like a building another giant WestMed facility over there. Now, that really is a challenge to whatever vision the neighborhood associations want, okay? They don't want to see that kind of thing, and they're always worried about the big T word, traffic, and disturbing the ambiance of the city. But I mean, one of the leaders of the neighborhood associations, who is a commercial real estate developer, he actually said it is not a bad idea to build a medical facility because it adds to White Plains' reputation as a medical center. And this is a very, very interesting concept. I mean, here's a guy who's been fighting development of all sorts, and all of a sudden he sees the logic of this. So,
well, I just wanted to ask you too. Does it make sense for White Plains, which in a sense is almost like the capital of the county?
Well, it is.
It is, isn't it? I mean, it's a de facto
the county
capital.
Seat. Yes.
It's a
God forbid
seat,
they
so.
Move it to Yonkers, has he? Just think if their county seat was in Yonkers.
Don't even go there. It's not going to happen. We just don't have the same capacity. But the point is that, you know, White Plains has a panache for it. And it's like shepherded. It can't stop the progression, and it makes sense to upgrade it to a much higher level, and there's a drive for it too. The money is there, and people want to make the investment in White Plains. I wish we had the same thing going on in Yonkers, but it hasn't bubbled up to the surface yet.
Well, you got the waterfront development. You got the waterfront developments there that are starting to roll.
Yeah, but it's stalled. It's stalled. Yeah. I've been hearing that it will resuscitate toward the end of this year, and there will be much more investment coming in. MGM Grand looks like they're going to get one of the authorities for full gaming, so that's going to be a major boost for the entire Westchester County and the Bronx. So it's going to be a major, major employer and a tremendous amount of money coming in. And then also with the studio being built, the movie studio on the riverfront, that's huge. And that's going to bring in a lot of New York movies up here. And instead of being down in the city, they're going to be developed here. So that's a huge thing for us.
Right, and that should be interesting. However, with the full-tilt casino, if it ever gets going, you've got to really increase your police force.
That's going to happen, and I'm sure once they give out the licenses, there's also going to be funding from the state level as well. They used to have funding for police when with regard to Empire City Casino before it was taken over by MGM, and I don't know what happened to it exactly, but I think it languished somehow, and I think it'll probably be resuscitated because of the amount of traffic and so on. So the police were necessary. And also to protect the area.
And the unsavory element.
Oh, absolutely.
You've got, casinos are not a culture center, okay?
No, it's not.
And they're basically operations that create more problems than they solve. Money doesn't solve. Their money may be good for the politicians, but it is not good for the people, because the people deteriorate into bad habits. They go into heels of debt. They bet over their head, not under it.
Well, that's a real problem with gaming altogether.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, nowadays you could gamble online. It's amazing. You get bombarded with that sort of stuff. And I think a lot of people don't realize how susceptible they are to, being drawn in to the glamour of it all. And then you go over your head, and a lot of people just are ruined by it.
Yes, casinos are glamorized in the movies, but they're really kind of sordid places. And not, I got to tell you, not every woman looks like $1 million in a casino.
Kidding me?
No.
That's news. I'm only joking.
Yes.
But women are beautiful.
I mean, you don't walk in there and expect to see them in glamorous evening gowns like they wore in the movie Casino or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's the glamour in the commercials is understated, is overstated, overstated.
It's overstated. Well, I mean, I guess we still live in the past. At least I do. I'm old enough to be living in the past. So,
I heard a great line. I heard a great line in a movie the other day. It was, I think it's up for an award, but the line was, "A love of a woman's past. She reconnected with him, and he was dying, and." He said, you know, the reason I'm constantly talking about the past is because I have no future. And I thought that was a very telling line. And it's one of the best lines I've ever heard about why people nostalgicize when they get of a certain age. Like,
I think I've arrived.
But because we are still involved in what is happening now and not playing golf every day,
that helps you balance a little bit of the past and the present.
It uses the brain. When you stop using your talent, you're dead.
Exactly. Very, very true. Well, John, any last words for you as we conclude our half hour, which is always a thrill because I love starting the week off with you. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, you wake up and smell the coffee.
Oh, yeah, I do that too now.
Yeah, that's true too. No, I just think people should be aware that, masking is helpful to you, and it should – I mean, even I have gone into places now without masks because I just forget it. The problem of telling people it's okay is you relax them.
Yeah, that's true.
And you're relaxing them for a reason. You know, you want them to get back and make money for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well,
about that.
There's got to be a balance, and I don't know if we found the balance, we're going to learn a lot more about the resurgence.
God help
China.
Us if it gets resurgence, right? But I don't understand the China surge. This is a new variant. Have they unmasked in
Well, they
China?
Do have. They do have more variants, and they had tested to such an extent they thought they had extinguished it. And evidently it's come back. I don't know why. But there are more variants out there. And
so the Chai Ping variant.
Maybe that's what
it
is. Who knows?
Yes. Is that how you pronounce the Chinese leader's name, Chai Ping? I don't know.
I think it's Xi Ping, but
Xi Ping.
Do I know?
Xi Ping variant, then we'll call it
the Xi Ping variant. So who knows? I hope we're not maligning Chinese. I don't speak Chinese at all. So
no.
We'll see how it goes.
Well, he has an intriguing decision to aid Russia or not.
Well, that's true.
That's
listen, we
got
to get going because we've got our next guest on. So all the best to you, John. You take care.
Thank you. The Biden Watcher coming up.
Absolutely. Be well. Right. Goodbye.
So long for an hour.
Okay, let's bring in Mr. Edelman. Good morning, Mr. Edelman. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Hezzy.
Well, thanks so much for waiting. It took me a little time to get off the other line as well.
I want to ask
you what's been going on with a lot of things. It seems that I read a report from Axios that the top Democratic operatives see an expansion of defections by the Hispanic voters to the GOP.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that happening? Is there a weakness that the Democrats are showing, or
I'm not sure what the extent of the attrition that this Democratic operative was talking about, but you know, Hispanic surnames can be in this country for years, and they can be small business people who feel that Donald Trump is better for business than Joe Biden, but I don't.
We lost them for some crazy reason, so we'll find out in a moment. Sometimes these things happen, and let me just see. Okay, let's see if I can get a hold of him. Sometimes these things happen, and I don't understand exactly what's causing on these things. We've never had these sort of issues before. here he is again. How are you, Michael? I don't understand what's going on lately. We've never witnessed this before, but in the last month, we keep dropping the line, and I don't get it. Anyway, so...
Okay, well, I'm back.
Thank goodness for that. Thank you. So we don't really quite understand what's that, or are these just, but you know, I don't understand why there would be a redefinition of the Hispanic vote, or is this just speculation?
What the fuck?
Oh, are you there?
You there?
Can hear you?
No, I am.
Yeah. Okay, great.
You keep going in and out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe that's my phone that's going on wrong.
Okay.
Now it sounds better to me. So what do you think? Is there anything that's going on that makes a change logical, or is this just speculation?
No, I'd have to see the poll and see what the difference is between – you know, Hispanic voting for Biden last time and what they're saying now. I don't know. But Hispanics in America are the same thing as everybody else. You know?
Exactly.
So they can, they can attrite to Donald Trump. Donald Trump's not going to be running, just to make that clear. He's not going to be the candidate for the Republican Party. He's just not going to. So it doesn't make a difference what they say now about Donald Trump. Totally irrelevant.
So, but the thing is Biden losing prowess from the Democratic side of the party?
No, the polling is showing that since he started with Ukraine, that his approval rating has gone up, not down.
Okay.
Whether that stays that way or continues to go up is another story, but. 60% of people approve of the way he's handling the foreign policy issues, which is all Ukraine right now.
Right. And how does that affect us? It doesn't affect us from a financial perspective, does it?
Well,
so
it does.
It's just image.
Does. No, the sanctions, Putin, affect. Everybody,
yeah.
Make everything more expensive. Make oil and gas more expensive because we're not – you're taking the Russian oil and gas off the market. You do that, you've got more demand chasing less oil, price goes up. We're paying close to $5 a gallon in Florida for
Absolutely.
Gas.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
that's one of the effects. The other effect is the oligarchs have a lot of pressure on them from us pulling the banking system out and pulling their seizing their hundreds of millions of dollars worth of yachts that they have. All of that is affecting the economy right now adversely, and Russia's economy is crashing.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, there's a lot going on, and a lot of it has to do with Ukraine and Russia and so on and so forth, and Poland. That affects us too, doesn't it? And why is Putin being so bold that he's trying to practically frighten Poland? He's bombing near Poland. Does he not? It seems crazy what he's doing, but the whole world is watching, and I guess we don't have much of a response at the moment.
Well, I think our response actually is pretty good. The sanctions are going to work. We're not going to confront him with ground troops. We're trying to avoid World War III, which would be nice. You know, you don't want to fight World War III. Putin is the former KGB guy who is enamored of the Soviets, but of the Russian Empire, the old Russian Empire in the middle of the 1800s, where all of these countries, Belarus, Ukraine, Latvia, Lithuania, and Poland were part of the Russian Empire.
Right.
And so he wants to reassemble that empire. And unfortunately, that's not going to happen because we have NATO. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine what would have happened if Trump was reelected and had withdrawn from NATO? That would have allowed Putin to go right through Eastern Europe and take countries one at a time. Trump wouldn't have cared.
Well, that's true as well. Well, you know, it was interesting, too, read in another article, this time from The Hill, about Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota.
Yeah.
She appeared on CNN's State of the Union, and she suggested that maybe fighter jets be flown in support of Poland. And she said, when the time is right. What was the purpose of something like that? You know, was that like to pressure the president to consider that? Because the president has already said we don't want to get involved in a war with our planes.
Well, I happen to disagree with President Biden's approach by saying what we're not going to do. I wouldn't tell an adversary what we're not going to do. I would leave everything on the table and let him speculate as to what our response would be. If he uses chemical weapons on civilians in Ukraine, that's a problem for him, and we ought to let him know that. Otherwise, we keep saying we're not going to supply our own aircraft and we're not going to supply ground troops. We're giving him a green light to do whatever he wants to do. That doesn't figure into a good strategy as far as I'm concerned. Those planes are MiG planes that Poland has, and the plan was for it to deliver the MiG planes to Ukraine because that's the planes that the Ukrainian pilots know how to fly, and to replace them with our fighter jets, give that to Poland. That's the plan, but so far, you know, I guess Biden has rejected that plan because he thinks it would be viewed as a one-on-one against Russia, but that's too bad for Russia as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt that Putin is going to start a world war over this business. And plus, if there's a world war, he can say goodbye to his billions and to his DACA, and the oligarchs can say goodbye to their yachts, so I don't think they want that outcome.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And is the world looking at it like we are, for example, when the Russian bombing hospitals and places where women are giving birth? They're bombing maternity wards, my God. What's the point of all of this?
It is outrageous, but they're, you know, I guess he thinks the Ukrainians are going to surrender if he goes after civilians. It's a war crime for which he needs to be held responsible along with his generals at some point.
Yes.
But the Ukrainians, guess what? They're not leaving, and they're not. They're going to fight in the streets. They fight in the streets of Kyiv. That is going to be almost impossible for the Russians to deal with. You know, house-to-house fighting. They're not. There are 3 million people in Kyiv. All right?
Yeah.
The Russians aren't going to be able to deal with that.
No. It's amazing, you know. I don't know how the rest of the world feels. You know, we mostly hear what's going on from the U.S. perspective. It's hard to tell because we don't get much of input from Europe or from Africa. Well, a lot of people who were studying in Africa, they've left and they've gone back to their own country. I had no idea really that many students were actually getting educated for higher education in the Soviet Union. So I just had no idea. I guess it was less expensive to go there than to go in other places, but they're quite advanced anyway. So very interesting.
Well, Russia has always produced good scientists and good authors and good artists. And it was, Mikhail Gorbachev allowed that wall to come down. It looked like Russia was going to be integrated into the West. And there was hope that democracy would flourish in Russia. But Putin has made that impossible. He's an authoritarian ruler who doesn't allow any criticism of his whatever he does. And so you're finding that he's recalling people, and instead of being integrated with the West, they're getting to be isolated. They're not having any banking with the West. That's off the table. Mm. Trade with the West, that's off the table. Everything that they were doing with the West is going to be stopped, and not only by the United States, but by the EU nations as well. So let's see what happens when Putin is totally isolated. And the people in Russia get the news that is accurate rather than what they're getting now, which is that Ukraine attacked Russia, which is really ludicrous.
Well, will Russia be demonized for many, many decades to come because of this incident that they perpetrated? I mean, Europe is
against. As long as Putin is the Russian czar, They need to take him down. Lindsey Graham was right. I don't usually agree with Lindsey Graham on a lot of things, but Putin needs to be taken out by his oligarch friends. There has to be a Caesar moment, a Julius Caesar moment here. He needs to be taken out. He's destroying the Russian people. He's destroying his own country, and he's murdering innocent civilians in Ukraine.
Do you understand why he went this way?
He was
challenged by Ukraine?
Well, he had bad intel from his intelligence agencies.
Yes.
He thought that invading Ukraine would be 48 hours and he would be done. But that's not what happened. He thought the people of Ukraine would be welcoming the Russians because they were Russian, but they're not Russian. They're Ukrainian. They may speak Russian. Some of them, but they don't view themselves as Russian.
No.
And so that's what he didn't. That's what he didn't take into consideration. He got bad information. And his strategy was
bad.
You know, when you have people around you that are yes people, as we saw with Donald Trump, you end up not making good decisions because you're not hearing any criticism of what you intend to do. It's all yes, yes, yes. You are the greatest. Well, this situation, it turned out he's not the greatest.
No. Well, one thing that's very interesting when you think about Trump and you think about Putin, were they very much alike? Because they're both very autocratic, and they think they're always 100% right, and they're not always
right.
Is that one of the reasons seems that they got along? But they were bosom buddies.
Well, that's right, because Trump admires autocrat. He wants to be one. He wants to be a ruler that broaches no criticism and that can do what he wants when he wants. and that who can enrich himself at the expense of the people he rules. Don't forget, Vladimir Putin and his oligarch circle of insiders have all become billionaires.
Yeah. Amazing. Literally amazing.
That's what Trump wants. That's what Trump wants. He wants to use the presidency. He's already demonstrated that he's going to use the presidency to enrich himself and his family. And that's why that's why he admires Vladimir Putin, because that's exactly what Putin has done.
Well, I wanted to ask you, unless you had some other points to make on this, I want to ask you about the Navajo Nation. I was really surprised.
I don't
surprised.
Know anything about Navajos.
I don't either, but
I don't know anything about it.
I don't know anything about them either. It was just the concept that they feel somehow ostracized from the system, they're trying to resuscitate or bring about a sense of being noticed by the American voter, because they don't feel that they have gained the rights, let's say, that Black Americans have and other minorities have. And I really never thought about the Navajo Nation or anybody else from, you know, the indigenous people here. Have we, because you don't hear anything about them. I don't know why, but maybe because we don't have that many people who are indigenous, like Indians in New York State.
That's right. If you lived in Arizona,
out west. Yeah.
If you lived in Arizona, you'd hear about it. There's no question that we have marginalized indigenous people, and we did that from the very beginning. And so they're living on, many of them still live on reservations. After we took their land, decided we weren't going to do anything to allow them to integrate into our populace, and so they've remained isolated and with little or no rights. So yeah, they're, and as they watch other groups get their rights, right, they say, well, what about me?
Exactly.
What about us?
You know, there's so many fissures somehow in American society. I used to think it was basically homogeneous, but it really isn't. Because we have so many different aspects of and societies, different wealth, different religions, different ethnicities, and so on. Is America always been like this, or have we moved away and are trying to redefine who we are now? Is that the issue? Is it struggle of prominence?
The issue is the struggle of white Christians to maintain their status in the country. That's what's going on. Then that's why some of these Russian pundits, or these pundits on Fox Radio, are so pro-Putin. Russia is a Christian country. It's Russian Orthodox, which is a brand of Christianity. They don't have diversity in Russia. There aren't any Blacks. There aren't any Latinos. There aren't any indigenous people. They don't have that. The United States has prided itself on welcoming everybody. But at some point in time, if you do that, the people that you are welcoming are going to outnumber white Christians. And that has been scaring white Christians because they feel they're losing their status. So that's what this whole thing with Trump is about, really. It's about preserving the status of white Christian nationalism in the United States. And it's unfortunate because the demographic changes are coming, whether or not these people want it. There will be demographic change. There will be, at some point in time, more brown and black people than there are white people. And those people are going to determine how the nation goes, the direction of the nation. And so you got to understand that and accept that, and some people don't accept it and are trying to stop it. Okay, but it is what it is.
Well, you know, just because some people of society that haven't been integrated into society and given the same opportunity, is the fear that they will eclipse, you know, the so-called white, you know, American. Is that what they're concerned about, that they'll lose their prominence? Why would they?
Yeah.
You know, if you're employed, you're employed, and if you have the education already, then you have it.
No, evangelicals don't look at it that way. There's a whole religious undertone to their seeking to keep control of the nation. There's a whole religious demagoguery that is involved in this. And, these people are preached to every Sunday, and they have come to believe that America is only going to be white and Christian. That's it.
That's it.
Okay, that's it. That's the reason they didn't want anybody from Southern Europe back in the 20s. Same reason, except now the demographics are totally different.
I didn't realize that was part of the dynamic in the 20s or 30s with Southern Europeans coming into America. Because the Irish suffered the same thing, the Italians, and other countries as well, and the South Americans as well. Is that unique to America?
Because America welcomes everybody. No, that's the great thing about America is all these different people come from all these different places, because America is a democracy and you have freedom here. You know, Russia, they don't have freedom. You can't say what you want in Russia.
Not at all.
You know, you're put in jail. You're put in jail if you oppose Putin or if you even speak out. They just passed a law saying if you tell the truth about Ukraine as opposed to what the state television is telling you, you can go to jail for 15 years.
Yes. I was shocked by that. But there's no pushback because there's no media that's going to challenge Putin.
But that's what Donald Trump would like to do. He would like to have the same laws.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be criticized.
Mm-hmm.
He's not interested in democracy. He's interested in power.
Yeah. What about when it comes to power and succession? There seems to be almost like an understatement that Biden will not run for another term in office, the vice president's been sent over to all over the world, but she's not doing too well. Does she have any chance of actually, running for president, or is she failing? And why is she failing?
Well,
she's not an idiot.
She's very bright. It's just that she doesn't come off as a leader when she's out because she giggles. We've got a lot of giggling going on. It's not a good thing when you're vice president and first thing when they're asked a question laughs. And she did that.
Yeah.
That's maybe a tick. It may be a crutch that allows her to think about her answer, but there are other crutches that are better. So, I can only speculate, but obviously if Joe Biden doesn't run for whatever reason, he's going to be what, 82 or something like that when he's time to run, that's too old. I mean, even I think that's too old. If he runs against Donald Trump, I'd vote for Joe Biden. I don't want Donald Trump in the presidency. And by the way, neither does Bill Barr, former attorney general, who was a toady when he was there, who protests that he wasn't, but he was, with the Mueller report and with the fraudulent elections that he failed to just speak out to the American people about.
Mm-hmm.
Even he says that Donald Trump is unfit to be president again. Okay?
Right.
So, you don't need, that's all you need to know. But I think that Joe Biden will not be the candidate of the Democratic Party, and there will be a primary. And Kamala Harris will be one of the people running in the primary, and I don't think she'll do all that well. Maybe I'm wrong. And you're going to have other people running in the primary who are middle-of-the-road Democrats, like Sherrod Brown from Ohio.
Yeah.
The guy from Arkansas, Mitch Landrieu. The governor of California, Gavin Newsom, all of these people are going to be going to have a big primary.
Well, is there
That's
something
if Biden doesn't
like,
run.
I'm not so enamored with Kamala Harris because of her conduct, but isn't there something she could do to ameliorate this giggle and this lack of I don't know.
Well, she's trying to stand up and talk.
Is she doing that?
She's trying to do that.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, she went to Poland.
Yeah, because
she had a press conference.
I didn't know that. Well, that's encouraging because she needs to take care of that because it only undermines the nation.
Right, but all I'm saying is there'll be a primary. I'm just saying if Biden doesn't run, Harris is not going to get that nomination without a fight.
Yeah. And then what about... Are we going to still continue this when we go into the next election? Are we going to be a little bit more settled, or are we still going to be at each other's throat within the Democratic Party and with the Republican-Democratic challenge as well? Do you see a change going on politically, or we're still muddling through this?
Yeah. No, the change I see is that Republicans more and more daily are saying it's time to look forward and not time to look back at the 2020 election. As the more Donald Trump harps upon the fact that the election was stolen, the more Republicans leave his circle and are thinking about running themselves. If Donald Trump really wants to run again, he's going to lose again, and that's what he can't afford. The one thing he can't afford is lose twice. As long as he's out there saying the election was stolen, he can tell himself that he wasn't the loser. But if you look, there was a poll that was released yesterday, Biden against Trump, it was 45-45.
Wow.
As time goes on, Biden will be beating him in the polling.
And then,
nobody wants Donald Trump because the more information we learn from the January 6th commission, the more it's going to appear that Donald Trump was the one who was orchestrating the insurrection.
When we talk about Donald Trump and him thinking of coming back and stuff, and there's talk of a GOP resurgence. Not necessarily because of Donald Trump, but just that they're resurging. Is that all going to wane as we hear more and more and the January 6th introspection is going to come about? Is that going to totally destroy the Republican Party?
Because it's going to
come
as
we come to the midterm elections.
It's not going to destroy the Republican Party. It's going to reveal that Donald Trump was anxious to engage in a coup d'etat. So it's going to destroy the Trump wing of the party.
Okay. All right. So then you've got potential other people who can run as part of the GOP. Is there an interest in the GOP again? Can they overcome the Trump era, in a sense?
Can they rebuild
the party?
Not soon.
Not soon. Okay. Because not everything is negative on one side or the other.
There are a lot of people that are still going to vote for Republicans,
no matter what,
because they've been conditioned by right wing media to think that Joe Biden is something's wrong with him mentally. But every time you see Joe Biden at a press conference, you realize he knows exactly what he's talking about, and Donald Trump never did and still doesn't.
Well, that's an interesting way to end our half hour, that's for sure, to reflect on that for the week. Well, listen, thank you very, very much, as always. Always enlightening.
Okay.
You stay well and stay healthy.
I'm trying.
Thank you very
much. Speak to you next week. Yep.
Be well. Bye-bye. Bye. There we have it, none other than Michael Edelman, the national political analyst and pundit. He's the only one I know who can marry the two in such a wonderful way and very clear. So it's amazing. Let me move back to our studio screen. Bear with me a second here. There we are. We'll say goodbye to him. And okay, and then we'll go on to some other issues. Hopefully you'll find of some pertinence. Bear with me a moment as I move on. wanted to go, where are we here? Okay. Well, one thing that you might find interesting on the local level, we have a new guy that joined us who is helping us not only do, well, he's actually begun as a movie reviewer for us, and his name is Christopher Fitzpatrick. And so we just posted his first article, and he covered the Batman review, which I think you'll find very, very interesting. Certainly the write-up is great, and by just listening to or reflecting on what he wrote, I was just taken aback by how much, you know, he knew about the Caped Crusader. And what's really fascinating, I haven't seen all the Batman movies, but he certainly knew a great deal about so many of them, and he was able to reflect on the differences between the different eras of Batman movies and characters. And there's something very compelling about this particular movie, which is amazing, fascinating artists that are involved. And hopefully you'll read the article. It's called The Batman Review with Robert Pattinson. He says, commanding the screen and your respect as the new Caped Crusader. And so very, very fascinating. Christopher Fitzpatrick is the author. And then we have something that was also very interesting that's happening locally. Greenberg has put together and created an app. It's called the Greenberg cell phone app, and you use it to report a pothole or a problem. And with GPS, you can report the location to the Greenberg Public Works Department, and you can either use the app or and use your cell phone to get there. Very, very exciting, very innovative, to say the least. So it's really fascinating. So the app is monitored 24/7, and issues related to public safety or those requiring immediate attention, such as wires or tree limbs being down, etc., should be reported directly to the Greenberg Police Department. Otherwise, everything else will be noticed with the app, and the point is you'll get a response, and then you'll get an update on top of everything else. So it's very, very interesting. What a great way to consider going. That's one thing, if anything. There are all kinds of opinions about Mr. Finer. I find him very innovative. I don't know how he has – I don't even know how he finds the time to intellectually contemplate these concerns, but it must come like – I don't know. It just comes so easily to him, or maybe he just makes it seem so easy to come up with these concepts, which are absolutely brilliant. Nobody else in Westchester County, and I don't know of any other place at all that has an app to do all these reporting. And the point is, it does bring everything to the modern era. It allows people to fix what's wrong. And it's a simple download. It's called Fix It, and it's the Greenberg app. It's phenomenal. What a great concept, and so that's really fun stuff. Then there's something really interesting. I don't know if you read this at all. We have a gentleman by the name of Perron, or his name is Dr. Louis Perron. And he writes about elections and campaigns. So his latest article is Perron Campaign's Election Update. And he writes about why winning an election is less expensive than what you think. And it's written by Dr. Louis Perron. And he's based out of Zurich, Switzerland. So he writes, winning an election is less expensive than what you think. There are two reasons for that, he says. First, the impact of money in election campaigns is generally overestimated. Hillary Clinton by far outspent Donald Trump, yet lost the 2016 presidential election And do you remember anything, an ad or tagline from Mike Bloomberg's campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination? Does the name Tom Steyer ring a bell? He's another wealthy candidate who blew millions running in the Democratic primary just 2 years ago. The candidate who holds the record for quarterly fundraising is Jamie Harris, who ran for the U.S. Senate in South Carolina. He raised $57 million U.S. dollars during one quarter. On Election Day, he came nowhere near winning, and I could go on and on. Second, a lot of money is wasted in campaigns. Major avenues for wasted spending are campaign materials without content or message, or worse, the wrong message. Crooks who promise a candidate the sky and the moon are another major reason for wasting money. Depending on the country and the setting, this can be Klan leaders who promise voters, fly-by-night pollsters, or social media experts, quote-unquote, who supposedly can create miracles online for their candidate. Remember this. If what you are being promised sounds too good to be true, it probably isn't true. Throughout the years, I've witnessed, meaning Dr. Perrone, several well-funded campaigns end up losing because they wasted their money on empty rhetoric. Oftentimes, the power of a research-based message that is credible, consistent, and that actually matches the political demand is underestimated. Having said that, of course, money is still one of the important factors in a campaign. You can't let your opponent have more than twice as much money than what you have. The key, however, is to have a winning campaign plan with an appealing message and enough money to communicate your message to your target audience and to implement that plan. Now, how much is enough? It is a very good question, which many candidates never ask themselves. As a matter of fact, many candidates think about it in the exact opposite order. They think about how much they can possibly raise. Then they think how they will spend that amount. Sound planning should always follow the reverse order. One, what is the goal? Two, how many votes does it take to reach that goal? Three, what is the plan I need to implement in order to reach the number of votes? And four, what is the price tag for that plan? The answer to question number four is the amount that is enough in your case, and that is the amount you should try to raise, which is number four, what is the price tag for that plan? Do you want to discuss how you can help your next election, a referendum, advocacy, or a lobbying campaign? Get in touch with Louis Perrone at PerroneCampaigns.com, or you can call him up in Zurich. He's got news and speeches and publications. He regularly posts his media appearances and comments on LinkedIn, and recently connected with my 13,000th contact, and you can join his network, and you can link to that, and so on and so forth. There's a lot of information, and I think you'll find of great interest. So that's on there, and you could look up his name, Perrone, P-E-R-R-O-N, on the Yonkers Tribune website, and you'll find it very, very interesting and compelling, to say the least. Let's look at some other things that you may find on the local level, which I think you'll find interesting. We'll mention the Batman review, the new Fix-It Greenberg cell phone app to report a pothole or a problem, and the latest information from Kathy Hochul, the governor, updating New Yorkers on the state's progress combating COVID-19. Then you've got this was really quite interesting. In case you have an alarm permit in Bronxville, renewals can be accomplished expeditiously by going online. Evidently, the permits permits expired on December 31 of 2021. So if you forgot or you weren't around or whatever, and you need to renew, You can do so online. The link is on the website on the Yonkers Tribune. So, you know, you'll be able to just keep track of what's going on there, which I think is very compelling. And then we have, 1 second. Oh, yeah, this was, I had not known him because I wasn't here when he was the head judge in Yonkers. His name is the Honorable Gilbert Rabin. He died, unfortunately, on the 12th of March. And I was impressed reading about him. And I should just read this to you. Normally, I wouldn't read an obituary, but he was so compelling. So I wrote that superlatives of every conceivable measure barely exemplify, much less extol, the humanity and the vast societal interest and contribution to society by Gilbert Rabin. The Tarrytown, New York, Yonkers City Court judge, lawyer, man of the year, was involved with children's hearing, education and research, Israel bonds, among other disparate interests. Personal demeanor exemplified his trajectory toward excellence and accomplishments few could or would fathom. And respect, empathy, and compassion for people were shown and revealed when he used the weapons by which he ameliorated injustice as a lawyer and as the city of Yonkers chief justice. So, and then, of course, there's notice of his family. He survived by his children. And unfortunately, his wife is predeceased him back in the year 2016. He was a founding partner of the Rabin, Panero, and Herrick firm, engaged in general practice with offices in New York City, White Plains, and Yonkers. And in case you're interested, services will be conducted on Tuesday, March 15th at 9:30 in the morning at the Riverside Memorial Chapel at 21 West Broad Street, Mount Vernon, New York. And that's about it. So just very, very fascinating about his life. Really very, very fascinating. So I think hopefully you'll consider reading that. I think you'll find it interesting. This is also very interesting. We've gotten into sent some articles that try to help people with life. So one of the things that we ended up writing is 5 things you must consider when buying a transport wheelchair. Tells you what to look for, how to plan based on your needs and the cost of such a vehicle, the type of vehicle you'll need. Some people are heavier than others, so on and so forth. Sometimes you need a tilt function, built-in brakes, adjustable seating, all kinds of different features that you may or may not need. There's a wide range of transport wheelchairs from as little as $100 to over $2,000. So you've got to decide what you really need and how to go about shopping for it and so on and so forth. So very, very compelling stuff. And hopefully you'll find some of these articles of interest. Then also, not only just for personal reasons, we recently posted an article, The Best Digital Advertising Agencies of 2022. Really fascinating stuff as well. It's about marketing and how to go about digital marketing and what you need to know and the types of companies out there that can help you move the issue forward, build your websites and so on and so forth, and what you need as from a digital marketing agency and the type of things that they can bring forward to you. And there are a couple of companies that we did mention who are really quite expert at all of this, which is fascinating as well. So those are the sort of things that are happening. Something locally, evidently a Canadian company in the Yonkers, the Department of Public Works, are testing asphalt made with recycled plastics. And this came to us from The Yonkers Department of Public Works, they're evidently working with a company called Last 20, a Canadian social enterprise. And what they do is they test asphalt made with recycled plastics. So the plastic-infused pavement will be tested by the DPW as part of the Westchester Innovation Network, a program launched by the Business Council of Westchester that aims at driving economic development, innovation, and growth. So they're excited about the Last 20 innovative solution and that upcycles plastic waste into pavement. And the woman whose company is was created, who created Last 20, she's a co-founder by the name of Lauren Barnes. And her company is also testing its pavement with Regeneron, the Regeneron campus at the Greenberg campus. So very, very compelling, to say the least, innovation, which is wonderful. Then there are also people who are into gambling. So the question is, what are NBA picks, a beginner's guide, how to go into it, which I think you'll find interesting. Then there was something else that we recently wrote about, the full spectrum hemp cannabidiol, CBD, known as cannabidiol. I hope I'm pronouncing that right because I'm not familiar with this. But it's an anti-inflammatory, good for dogs, which is really very interesting. And so the CBDs, they don't have the psychoactive effects that recreational marijuana users are after. So this is to fight off inflammation for dogs, those are some of the things that are happening. I understand that a lot of people are also using that for people. Again, very, very interesting what's happening. And we'll see where that goes. I'm not quite sure how to look at that myself. But, you know, we report it because it just is what it is. Then you'll find, I think you may find this interesting, wrote an article called Whether Politics or Politics, the Holier Than Thou Have Something Disingenuously to Say. So that's a editorial, which I hope you'll find interesting, and so on and so forth. So let me quickly look and see what else is going on the national and international stage. One second here. This is really very, very interesting because I never expected this to happen, but it is. And evidently, bear with me a moment as I pull this up. Okay, evidently Ukraine leader Zelensky is going to address a full U.S. Congress. This is unbelievable. Ukraine's president will deliver a virtual address to Congress on Wednesday as lawmakers bid to ratchet up pressure on the White House to take a tougher line over Russia's invasion. The appeal comes with both sides launching a fresh round of talks amid deadly airstrikes in the capital of Kyiv, nearly 3 weeks after Russia's President Vladimir Putin ordered the attack. We look forward to the privilege of welcoming President Volodymyr Zelensky's address to the House and Senate to convey our support to the people of Ukraine. As they bravely defend democracy, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her Senate counterpart Chuck Schumer said in a joint letter to lawmakers. Anthony Rota, the Speaker of the Canadian House of Commons, said Zelensky would also address lawmakers in Ottawa on Tuesday. Zelensky's pleas to help or for help to defend the country from Russia's deadly assault have grown increasingly desperate, and he has repeatedly urged Washington, the European Union, and NATO for military hardware. dressed in a military green T-shirt and seated beside a Ukrainian flag, Zelensky spoke to lawmakers from the United States Republican and Democratic parties in a March 5 video call to plead for Russian-made planes. Poland has offered to send Soviet-style MiG-29 fighter jets to Ukraine via a U.S. airbase in Germany. The White House, fearing the move could escalate tensions with Russia, has rejected the proposal, saying it raised serious concerns, quote-unquote, for the entire NATO alliance. And Moscow confirmed at the weekend that its troops target supplies of Western weapons in Ukraine and that the pouring in of arms would turn convoys, quote, into legitimate targets, end quote. There is a growing clamor on both sides of Congress, however, for a more assertive U.S. posture. What we've heard directly from the Ukrainians is they want them badly, Republican Senator Ron Portman said of the planes in an interview with CNN on Sunday during a trip to the Ukraine-Poland border. They want the ability to have better control over the skies in order to give them a fighting chance. I don't understand why we're not doing it, end quote. Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar, who was also on the visit, told the network she had spoken to Biden, quote, about 10 days ago, end quote, about the fighters, adding, I'd like to see the planes over there, end quote. Republicans initially led calls for the transfer last week, although military veterans among the Democrats and the 58-member partisan Problem Solvers Caucus have also backed the move. With Russia's alarming disregard for Ukrainian civil casualties, the United States must help supply more comprehensive air defense systems to send Ukraine and its people, they said in a letter of support. Congress usually defers to the White House on foreign policy, but has increasingly been pressuring the Biden administration for a more punitive response to Russia's aggression with notable success. Members of both parties called for tougher sanctions against Russia and authorized more than double the military and humanitarian aid the administration had requested for Ukraine. Congress has also seen was also seen as having nudged Biden to announce a U.S. ban on Russian oil, seen as politically risky and spiraling gas prices, and led the pressure for Washington to end permanent normal trade relations with Russia. Biden authorized $200 million in additional military equipment for Ukraine on Saturday, on top of the $350 million green light, I guess, on February 26. That's really powerful stuff. This is very interesting because I never expected this at all. It seems that Elon Musk is challenging Putin to fight with Ukraine as the prize. Well, he says, put up your dukes, Vlad. Elon Musk, the world's richest man, on Monday challenged Russian President Vladimir Putin to a fight with nothing less than the fate of Ukraine, the scene of Moscow's brutal invasion, at stake. Eccentric billionaire and founder of aerospace company SpaceX took to Twitter, where his messages are notoriously erratic, to see whether the Russian leader would test his mettle in person rather than through his country's forces fighting across the border. Quote, I hereby challenge Vladimir Putin to single combat. Stakes are Ukraine, said Musk. Do you accept this fight? He added in Russian, directly addressing the official English language Twitter account of the 69-year-old president. When one of Musk's 77 million followers wrote that the Tesla founder might not have thought his challenge through, Musk said he was absolutely serious, quote unquote. If Putin could so easily humiliate the West, then he would accept the challenge, but he will not, he added. There was no immediate reaction from the Kremlin. The South African-born Musk, who's 50, had already offered his support for Kyiv, tweeting, quote, hold strong, Ukraine, this month, while also offering, quote, my sympathies to the great people of Russia who do not want this war. He also responded to a Kyiv plea by activating the Starlink internet service in Ukraine and sending equipment to help bring connectivity to areas hit by Russian military attacks. Musk often raises eyebrows on Twitter. In February, he accused the United States stock market regulator, which had imposed fines and restrictions on Musk and Tesla, of trying to muzzle his free speech. And he compared Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to Adolf Hitler in a message supporting opponents of government COVID restrictions. Quote, he later deleted the post. So he's evidently an eccentric sort of guy based on that alone, but we'll see where it all goes. One second here. And this is very interesting with regard to the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. Evidently, the church is mobilizing against a Russian invasion. So, this is a report based on services throughout the country that took place on Sunday, March 13, despite ongoing attacks in Ukraine by Russian forces. And while worshippers pray for peace, the church's 7,000 priests are volunteering with the army and humanitarian aid efforts. This is a report from Franz Van Katz, James Andre, and Jonathan Walsh, report from a service in the capital of Kyiv. And let's see if we can play this for you. Oh, it's amazing. It's just about 2 minutes in length. So bear with me a moment. One second. 1 minute here. 1 second. We're trying to raise this up. So we'll see in a moment. Okay, I think we're going to be getting there in a second. All right. One second.
Only few worshippers have chosen to attend Mass at St. Michael's Cathedral on this third Sunday of war. Those who are here are all praying for the same things.
For peace in Ukraine and to be saved from the Russian occupants who invaded our territory. They're killing people for nothing. Children are dying. Women are dying. It hurts so much.
Today I pray for the defense of Ukraine and for the safety of my family and my loved ones and for the armies who are defending our motherland.
The Sonek Monastery is the headquarters of the...
Bear with me, sometimes it takes a little time to get there. Bear with me a moment. Looks like we lost a little bit of the audio on that. It'll get there. Okay, evidently we lost the balance of the recording. Okay, well, can't go there then, so we'll just move on. Forgive me about that, and we'll see what else we can cover for you. Bear with me. Okay, Ken's here. One second here. Is this, I was looking for something else, which I thought you might find interesting. One second. This is what I was looking for. So bear with me a moment here. Okay, here it is. This should come up in a second. Evidently, the former gorilla, his name is Petro, wins a decisive presidential primary victory in Colombia. So Gustavo Petro, the front runner for Colombia's May presidential election, secured the nomination of the left-wing Historic Pact coalition on Sunday during voting in primaries. Centrist Sergio Fajardo and right-winger Federico Gutierrez, both former mayors of Colombia's second city of Medellin, also secured nominations from their respective coalitions. Petro is a former guerrilla in the M19 rebel group, and Gutierrez, a civil engineer, both polled well ahead of their coalition rivals. In the Historic Pact primary, Petro won more than 80%, some 3.5 million votes, with around 80% of precincts reporting Gutierrez won more than 54%, some 1.7 million ballots in the primary for a coalition representing a sector of Colombia's right wing with about 80% counted. The contest for the centrist grouping was much closer. Fujado, a mathematician, won just under 33%, or close to 590,000 votes with 80% counted. Voters also cast ballots for 108 senators and 187 lower house seats. Colombia's Congress has been split among a myriad parties in recent elections, forcing presidents to build big tent coalitions in order to pass legislation. Complete legislative results are expected today. Incumbent President Ivan Duque's right-wing Democratic Center Party has already selected Oscar Iván Zuluaga as its presidential candidate. Petro lost to Duque, whose terms end in August, in the second round in the 2018 presidential election. And some voters at the polling place in the south of the capital city of Bogota told Reuters they voted for Petro, also a former senator, in the hopes of seeing job creation. Quote, "I want us to have more work for it to be easier to get a formal job," said unemployed Petro backer Alberto Lopez, who's 31. Others said an eventual centrist party victory could help counteract polarization. Quote, "We cannot continue to be caught between Petro and whoever is chosen by Uribe," said textile merchant Alicia Chavarro, 46, referring to ex-president Alvaro Uribe, whose influence was key in the elections of Colombia's last president. Residents of the 167 municipalities, which have been most affected by the country's long conflict, voted to choose 16 representatives who are war victims, and their seats in place for two legislative terms were agreed under a 2016 peace deal between the government and the now demobilized FARC guerrillas. So there's a lot going on so many levels here. So it's going to be very interesting to see what's going on. Now let's look at something else, which I think you'll find really interesting. And bear with me a moment as I try to pull this up. We're having a slow uptake today on the internet. And this is interesting. This comes from Forbes. It's a senior contributor by the name of Bruce Y. Lee. He's in the healthcare, and story is about the new Deltacron COVID-19 coronavirus, and which is a recombinant of the Delta and Omicron device. So I think listen to this and see what you think. Bear with me a moment. He's a writer, journalist, a professor, systems modeler, computational and digital health expert, an avocado eater, and an entrepreneur, not always in that order. So it's going to be very interesting to see where that goes. Bear with me a moment as we try to activate this.
Deltacron, COVID-19 coronavirus variant as a recombinant of Delta and Omicron. By Bruce Wiley. As they say, some relationships were meant to be. With the Delta and the Omicron variants of the COVID-19 coronavirus circulating so widely for so long, the two versions of the virus didn't need Tinder to find each other. And voila, here's what that unholy union seems to have produced. Something that's now been dubbed the Deltacron variant. The Deltacron name first emerged in early January 2022. As Lisa Kim reported for Forbes back then, Leon Dios Kostrikis, professor of biological sciences at the University of Cyprus, and his team indicated that they had discovered a new version of the severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2, SARS-CoV-2, that combined characteristics of the Delta and Omicron variants. They had detected this version in samples taken from 25 patients with COVID-19 in Cyprus, 11 of whom were hospitalized at the time. The research team dubbed this new version the Deltacron variant, as a combination of the words Delta and Omicron, perhaps because the Delta variant had emerged earlier than the Omicron variant, and Amilta may sound too much like a militarized version of an omelet or OMG. Fast forward a couple months and there is now solid evidence for a Delta Omicron recombinant virus. That's what GISAID said, based on findings shared by a team from the Institut Pasteur in France. GISAID stands for the Global Initiative on Sharing Avian Influenza Data. Established in 2008, GISAID is a worldwide collaborative platform that allows scientists across the world to openly share genomic data originally for influenza viruses, but now also for COVID-19 coronaviruses. The word recombinant is related to the word recombining and refers to a recombining of genetic material. When two different versions of the SARS-CoV-2 infect the same cell to then play hide the spike, so to speak, and reproduce, they can essentially swap genetic material. This swap left, swap right situation can result in the viral offspring having some new combination of their parents, two sets of genetic material. This new Deltacron recombinant includes structures from both the Delta GK, I.4 and Omicron GRA, BA.1 lineages. As Jeremy Camille, PhD, an associate professor of microbiology and immunology at Louisiana State University, LSU, Health Shreveport, tweeted on March 8th, this new recombinant has been circulating since early January 2022 and detected in several regions of France by the Institut Pasteur team. France may have a reputation for being a romantic destination, but it hasn't been the only country to see this virus, love child of the Delta and Omicron variants. Similar recombined versions of the virus have also appeared in Denmark, which was the first country in the European Union to lift COVID-19 restrictions nationwide in early February, and the Netherlands. Such recombinants can result when your answer to the question, are you infected with the Delta or the Omicron variant, happens to be yes. With both versions of the virus in your body and in your cells at the same time, a lot of swapping left and right can occur. There's probably already been a fair number of people infected with both the Delta and the Omicron variant simultaneously, since both variants have spread in relatively uncontrolled manners throughout the U.S. and Europe. Therefore, the emergence of such a recombinant should not be a surprise, as Maria Van Kerkhove, Ph.D., who's the World Health Organization's, who's technical lead for the COVID-19 response, tweeted. Whenever a new version of the SARS-CoV-2 emerges, the big question is whether it's more transmissible, i.e., spreads more easily, than previous versions, and whether it's more likely to cause more severe COVID-19. Okay, the two biggest questions are whether it's more transmissible and more likely to cause more severe COVID-19, and whether it's more adept at evading existing immune protection from vaccination or previous natural infection. Yes, these are the three biggest questions, along with whether it doesn't respond as well to treatments such as intravenous antibodies or antivirals. Okay, maybe there are four big questions. Regardless, so far, there have been too few reported cases of Deltacron variant infections to answer any of these questions. It would take many more cases to establish any statistically significant trends. Therefore, even though Deltacron may sound like a new Transformers character, its appearance should not be a cause for panic. Of course, the WHO will rarely say, okay, folks, it's time to panic now. We will be releasing guidelines on how specifically to panic and flap your arms in the air. But the rarity of the Deltacron variant cases to date is another reason why it isn't yet cause for additional concern. Like reality TV stars, new variants will continue to come and go. Some may stick around, cause a ruckus, and even become the head of a country, while most others will quickly fade away and be replaced. For now, this Deltacron variant hasn't risen to the level of being either a variant of interest or a variant of concern, as defined by the WHO. It does, however, bear close watching and following. The emergence of the Deltacron variant is yet another reminder that the COVID-19 pandemic is not over until official public health organizations have declared it over, and not politicians, TV personalities, or some dude on Facebook. A number of people in the U.S. seem to be acting as if the pandemic emergency has somehow already passed, even though the U.S. has still had an average of 35,036 newly reported COVID-19 cases, 31,323 COVID-19-related hospitalizations, and 1,272 COVID-19-related deaths per day over the past 14 days, according to the New York Times. All of this should make you wonder whether the recent lifting of COVID-19 precautions, such as face mask requirements, will be yet another example of premature relaxation. And as I've said before for Forbes, things that are premature could leave people surprised and disappointed in a potentially messy situation. Sure, this Deltacron variant may or may not turn out to be a nothing burger. Nevertheless, as long as the virus remains so widespread, so many people remain unvaccinated, and the SARS-CoV-2 keeps knocking spikes so frequently, chances are new variants of interest and concern will at some point emerge.
So that's it. Bruce Y. Lee is a writer, journalist, professor, systems modeler, and so on. So that's our story for you today, and we got to get going, so take care.